Obama has done more in his first 100 days in the White House than any commander-in-chief since Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Of course, 100 days, the whole idea of 100 days comes from FDR. The country was in a tremendous depression, and he did a lot in those first 100 days, everything from a bank holiday to really getting the nation back on economic footing. So, how has Barack Obama done, both domestic policy and foreign policy? Well, we can look at some of the statistics. The growth rate in the United States economy in the quarter before Barack Obama took power is one of the worst since the Great Depression, -6.3%. It guaranteed will not be that bad this quarter, and many feel that the economy has hit a bottom, or at least is not descending in a free fall anymore, and will soon come out of it. Even the stock market is higher than it was on Inauguration Day, although it is one-third lower than it was 1 year ago. Perhaps the best way to measure it would be the amount of Americans who approve of the way the country is going, the direction the country is heading. In December, that number was 15%. Today, it's 50%. It is a majority of Americans. Well, how's the opposition doing? How about the Republican Party? Well, apparently even its moderates are defecting, including Arlen Specter, Senator of Pennsylvania, and the number of Americans who consider themselves Republicans today is at 21%. I don't know if that's the lowest, but I think it's the lowest certainly in the last 30 years. But there are a few of them left. There are a few of those die-hard elephant people who stand by their party and, I guess, attack the president's agenda, the Just Say No party. One of them is sitting to my left. His name is Mike Lane. He's my friend, even if he's often wrong. Mike Lane, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
I'm not sure why I'm to your left, Mark. Perhaps we should rethink this whole thing.
Well, you're stage right on the camera, so that's good. So, Mike, how has the president done?
Well, I'll give him two grades, Mark. You know, for getting things done, I'm going to agree with the historians. You know, he's accomplished a lot in terms of getting his agenda up, working with the Congress and getting it through. I'm going to give him an A. He would almost deserve an A+, but he really botched a lot of the transition, and so he loses the plus on that and falls back to an A, maybe an A-.
First A he's ever gotten from a Republican.
Well, so, he's gotten a lot done. Okay. In terms of substance, in terms of moving the nation forward, in terms of helping the economy recover, in terms of making us more safe, I'm going to give him an F across the board.
An F across
the
board.
He's doing a lot, but he's doing all the wrong things.
Now, obviously, you're in the minority. Obviously, the majority of Americans disagree with you.
I wouldn't say that, but go ahead. Make your point.
Well, the majority of Americans, some 60-something percent support him, approve of him in office.
Yeah, they
do. More than 50% think the country's in the right direction. That's a huge cry from where we were just 3 months ago.
Mark, there's a disconnect, which is not unusual in the beginning of a president's term, between support for the president and thinking he's doing the right things and looking at his specific policies and approving of them. If you look at the polling, yes, he's doing quite well. If you look at the specific polling on his policies, if you look at the stimulus package, if you look at the budget, if you look at his foreign policies, he has quite a low number. A large plurality of Americans disagree, in many cases a majority of Americans disagree with what he's doing.
I don't think you'll find much of that. The polls I've seen have all shown support. But let's take each policy one by one. We'll go through them. Anytime you give a grade, you have to go through the particulars.
So let's
start with the domestic policy. Probably the biggest economic battle that President Obama had to face in the first 3 months of his presidency was the stimulus package, which famously got no Republican votes in the House and only three Republicans in the Senate, one of whom is now a Democrat, Arlen Specter, and the two Republicans who we hope to attract to our party from the state of Maine when they realize that their party doesn't seem to want them anymore. The stimulus package was very interesting to me because the Republican Party seemed to just say no. They didn't have an alternative proposal. They seemed to think that the best way to get out of this economic recession, bordering on depression, was to do nothing, maybe even cut spending, a la Herbert Hoover. Why would anyone support such a plan?
Okay, the first thing, Mark, is I have to take issue with the first battle that the president fought was the stimulus package. In fact, there is no battle. The Republicans don't have enough people to be relevant in the Congress. Elections have consequences. We got our butts whooped, and so there was no battle.
Well, they were relevant to the extent Arlen Specter was still a Republican. You recall they did have to shave at about $70 billion to get those three Republicans on board. So I'm not going to argue they were... I'm not going to say they were irrelevant. They were marginally
So they
relevant.
Went from a trillion down to
they
900 billion.
800 to 730. They shaved it 10%. You got your 10%. Anyway, go ahead, please.
So, again, there's no battle going on. The Democrats control Congress. The Democrats control the administration. The Democrats control everything. It is the Democrats' government. It is the Democrats' ball. It is the Democrats' game. They own everything. I mean, the Republicans are just irrelevant, and I regret that, but I have to admit right up front that there's simply nothing we can do. Now, I will also take issue with the fact that there was no alternative. In fact, the Republicans did offer an alternative stimulus package. It was about half the size of the Democrat stimulus package, and it was more loaded towards tax cuts to revitalize the private economy than it was towards government spending, et cetera. It only had, instead of $730 billion of government spending, I think it had something closer to about $150 to $175 billion of government spending, the rest of it being tax cuts. You don't know about it. Nobody knows about it because, of course, the Democrats in Congress would not permit a vote on it.
So, one of the things I found interesting, though, was that the tax cuts were very much favored toward the wealthy. I was reading the Washington Post article about the first 100 days, and they were talking about how Barack Obama really reached out to the Republicans. I mean, he went three times doing something in his first month that George Bush never did in 8 years, going alone with the Republicans into their caucus room to try to convince them to come on board. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. They talk about a meeting with him and the minority whip, Eric Cantor. He's number two in the House, and many consider him a rising star in your party.
Right, he is.
And one of the things that he pressed Barack Obama on was not doing tax breaks for low-income families. Eric Cantor was against tax breaks if they went to poor people. So he wanted actually, he was opposed to tax cuts. And to which Barack Obama responded, quote, "I won, so I think on that one I trump you." Here is Barack Obama willing to work with the Republicans, but the Republicans actually wanted higher taxes on people than Barack Obama wanted, and that was one of the things they disagreed on.
No, actually, Mark, you're wrong about this, and the president was wrong about this. The president made a big thing about going up to meet with the Republicans, but his meeting with the Republicans, his accommodation, his bipartisan effort was, okay, here's my plan. I've come here. I want you to endorse my plan. When they tried to negotiate with the president said, no, here's my plan. We're going to go with my plan. Now, as far as Eric Cantor's comments about, you know, poor people, et cetera, look, we all know that the lowest 40% of incomes in America do not pay federal income taxes. So how can you give a tax break to somebody who's not paying income taxes
because
in the first place?
Because they pay other taxes, as
okay.
You well know.
So they pay higher
Social Security taxes.
But did the president...
They
actually don't pay higher
Social
Security.
Higher as a percentage of their income.
But did the president suggest that they maybe get their Social Security taxes reduced? No. Did he suggest that maybe they get their other payroll taxes reduced? No. What he suggested was that we will give them tax rebates on taxes that they didn't collect in the first... that they never paid in the first place. And Republicans, you know, quite honestly, have a hard time squaring that circle.
Why are we
calling it a tax cut when we take somebody who didn't pay taxes in the first place, give them money, and call it a tax cut?
Let me suggest to you that this is why your party is losing elections.
I don't think
precisely
so, but go ahead.
This kind of argument. You just admitted that they pay taxes. And then in the next sentence you said, and I know that...
They don't pay income taxes.
Okay, they don't pay income taxes. I don't think the American people care when the government takes a dollar here, or the government takes a dollar here, or the government gives their dollar here, or gives their dollar here. Americans care about the total taxes they pay. I don't think it really matters whether it's in my Social Security, payroll tax, or my income tax.
And what
Republicans are saying is semantically, it was terrible, because we should have cut this tax rather than giving an income tax rebate on this one. Yeah, the result would have been the same. Yeah, the same hundreds of dollars would have went out. It would have been exactly the same in people's pockets, but semantically it was wrong, and therefore we're going to be against the whole bill.
Mark,
I think that's putting semantics over stuff.
I think you're taking liberties with the lack of knowledge of the American people. I think they do know the difference between an income tax and a payroll tax and a sales tax.
They don't care.
Not only do I think they know the difference, I think they do care.
They care whether they pay the government a dollar in this way or a dollar in that way.
You know, there was a guy, you know, we're originating for our audience. We originate out of Virginia. There was a guy who was elected governor on repealing one particular tax back in 1997. People know what their taxes are. They know which ones they like. They know which ones they hate. Well, they don't like any of them. They know which ones they hate. Jim Gilmore was elected governor of Virginia on repealing one specific tax. People know what taxes they're paying.
People know when someone who's elected...
And they care.
...breaks their promises. But frankly, if you tax $100 less through this system and make someone pay $100 more in the other system, I don't think Americans care that much. I think to say that Barack Obama didn't work with the Republicans because you want phrase it differently, I think is absurd.
Okay.
Barack Obama went and said, look, what can we work on? What can we agree on? Where can we work together?
Was he willing?
One of the things, for example, he did is he did not end the Bush tax cuts right away. The Republicans didn't want them ended right away. They don't expire till the end of 2010. He said, fine, I agree on that. He tried to work on the things that
you
could agree on.
No.
But what Eric Cantor asked him to do was to break a campaign promise. Barack Obama said everyone that earns under $250,000 will get a tax cut. Eric Cantor wanted to say to him, I don't care that you were elected, break your campaign promise. There's plenty of room to work with Republicans that's not an explicit break of a campaign promise.
Mark, he's broken so many other campaign promises, it's ridiculous. And, you know, I mean, I can itemize, you know, 10 of them if you want me to, but all he's done is break campaign promises. The fact of the matter is you cannot give a tax cut to somebody who hasn't paid taxes. So
agreed that they do pay taxes.
You
cannot give a tax cut to someone who doesn't pay income taxes? That's your argument? Really?
They pay payroll taxes.
Yes.
We were giving an income tax break to people who don't pay income taxes. It doesn't compute.
As I said, I think it's all about semantics. But here's the thing that I find really interesting. The Republicans' only argument that I've heard, and you'll tell me if there's more, on the stimulus package, or frankly on almost any of President Obama's economic things to help the economy, was that we need to cut spending and cut taxes. That seems to be the only thing they're saying. But what's interesting is when you read what happened on the stimulus package, not only did Eric Cantor ask him to end the tax breaks for low-income Americans, but the article goes on to describe why it is that no Republicans voted for it in the House. And one of those Republicans was Candace Miller of Michigan. And she wanted to have a special tax break for people who buy new cars. She wanted $11.5 billion, but Barack Obama only gave her $1.6 billion. She wanted $10 billion more. That would have raised the deficit $10 billion more. She didn't get it. She voted against the bill. So what's fascinating to me is why didn't we get more Republicans on this bill? Because, one, we gave tax cuts to low-income Americans. And, number two, we didn't have more spending than Obama wanted.
No. Mark, you didn't get Republicans on the bill because it's three times larger than it needs to be. It's not an effective stimulus. It didn't have enough tax cuts. The bill was passed 90 days ago, and has a single dime been shoveled out the door? Have any of these shovel-ready projects actually started yet? Not a one. I mean, they're in the engineering stage. They're this.
That's how you begin a project.
Mark,
you got engineers first. You don't build it before you engineer it.
No. Shovel ready means the engineering's been done. That's the definition of shovel ready. The engineering's been done. Not a single project going yet. We have money that's going out in 10, 11, and 12 when the economy's going gangbusters.
Okay.
It's not stimulus.
Some of the projects are shovel ready. Some of them are engineering ready. Some of our callers are ready to do it.
We were told they were shovel ready.
I hope that the callers do. The number is 888-488-MARK. 888-488-6275. We'll take your question right after this.
Listen to smoke before you give it a try.
Only you.
Don't play with matches. Don't play with fire. I like this.
Yeah, which is a nice thing. This is where we're going to go in. But let's hopefully bring the caller on air. I'd rather they speak than just ask.
Don't play with matches. Don't play with fire.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Fire.
Why don't you just wash your car at home?
When I wash my car, everything runs down the street and down into the storm drains. With all the chemicals and the soaps and waxes, the last thing I want to do is poison my own drinking water.
At least here, it's all contained and recycled on site.
That's why I also take my car in for oil changes instead of doing it myself. I take a chance on spilling stuff.
You know what the best part is?
What?
More time to kick back and watch the game.
How far would you go to protect the planet?
I want you to build an ark.
Here we go.
Okay, that's good.
Maybe there's another way.
People, the flood is imminent.
Is it too much to ask for a little precipitation?
Go to fightglobalwarming.com to find out what you and your community can do to reduce global warming pollution.
Somewhere around the world, there are men and women of the armed forces risking their lives,
helping rebuild communities after natural disasters, collecting toys for needy children, tutoring kids in school. These are your sons and daughters who work to keep us safe, secure, and free. Dedicated men and women who put their country first.
Welcome.
Here again, the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're discussing the first 100 days of Barack Obama with my guest, Republican Mike Lane, and we're talking about partisanship or bipartisanship or lack thereof. Let me suggest to you, Mike, that the Republicans have two choices. They can do, as you've said, say, we're irrelevant, we just say no, we don't care, we're against every single thing Obama does, no matter what. Or they can work with Barack Obama, and as President Obama pointed out in his press conference just a couple nights ago, you know, if they are willing to work with him, they will get some movement. They will get some of the things they like. They won't get him on the tough questions that the people voted on in 2008. There he's going to go with the majority. He's going to go with the campaign promises. But there's lots and lots of issues around the side. Arlen Specter is a great example. Arlen Specter supports very strongly funding the National Institute of Health. Democrats are also for funding the National Institute of Health, but this is Arlen Specter's issue. It's one he cares passionately about. And because of his pushing, more money is going to the National Institute of Health, which, let's face it, saves a lot of American lives in its research on cancer and heart disease and so forth. So here's an example of a Republican who was trying to work with the administration and was basically disenfranchised by his party. His party said, oh, you're working with Obama? We don't want to work with you.
That's not fair. Come on, Mark. The Senate Republicans were on board with reelecting Arlen Specter. They had, you know, John Ensign, who's the chairman of the Senatorial Campaign Committee, and Cornyn from Texas, were both out there campaigning hard for Arlen Specter.
That's true.
It was Arlen Specter who decided that he was going to take the 30 pieces of silver and walk across the aisle.
I don't dispute that official Washington was behind Arlen Specter. I mean, certainly George Bush helped elect Arlen Specter in 2004. It wasn't official Washington. It was the Republicans in Pennsylvania. It was people like the Club for Growth. It's the people, let's face it, who are now majority of your diminished party, who say, you know what, Arlen Specter wasn't pure enough. Official Washington actually understood the trade-offs. They understood the practicalities. They understood that Pat Toomey, who was going to win the Republican primary, would have no chance of winning statewide in Pennsylvania. So they were supporting Arlen Specter. I get that. They were right. But someone did inform the grassroots Republicans in Pennsylvania, frankly, most of the moderates had already left the party, and this is the rump that's left, and they want purity.
You know what, Mark? One of the things that I love is that the Republican Party is a grassroots party where people are not told top-down the way they are in the Democratic Party what the message du jour is. We're allowed to actually have
Barack
our own.
Obama is we're, not a grassroots candidate?
No, he's a top-down. He tells
Hillary
people what
Clinton,
to think.
Wasn't she the top-down candidate?
Barack Obama tells people what to think. Republicans
he's the president
think for
of the
themselves.
United States.
Republicans think for themselves.
Tell people what to do, not what to think.
One of a senator's job, or one of a United States senator's jobs, is to keep in touch with his constituents and to make sure that he's got a relationship and a communication going there with the constituents. Now, what Senator Specter did was he flat out admitted that he lost touch with his constituents. And when he said, you know, I'm not willing to have my 30 years in the Senate judged by the people
of the Republican primary. He didn't lose touch with his constituents. He lost touch with the people that are remaining in Republican hands in Pennsylvania.
Well, you know,
most of whom have left.
If you're not willing to face primary voters in your own party, then I guess you've lost touch, right?
And therefore he switched.
Look,
Senator
Specter left the party. Senator Specter
and the party left.
Senator Specter is a rather self-absorbed, you know, self-important, arrogant.
Can you name a senator who isn't of either party?
Well, I was going to say, you know, I could give you 35 more examples of how awful and unlikable Arlen Specter is, and he's all of those things, and he fits in very well in the United States Senate. He's
most,
got a lot
most
of friends.
Most politicians
there, you know?
Are fairly self-absorbed and
right.
arrogant, particularly those in the United States Senate of either party.
Arlen took the 30 pieces of silver and went around, and so now he's going to,
But here's the point. But I would argue Arlen Specter is not the cause, he's the effect. He's not the genesis of the problem. He's the result of the problem. What happened was Pennsylvania had a very contested primary at the grassroots level among two very important Democrats, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. As it happens, Hillary Clinton won that primary.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was moderate Republicans wanted to choose in the Democratic primary. They left the party in droves. They made their choice. And frankly, even the Hillary supporters are very happy with Barack Obama. That left a very, very small number of true Republicans left in Pennsylvania. And those small number of true Republicans weren't going to vote for a moderate conservative such as Arlen Specter. Here's what I think is going on in your party, and you've mentioned it yourself, the debate going on. Should your party be small and pure and truly conservative, or should it include people like Arlen Specter, who, let's face it, are middle of the road?
Okay. I can't abide Arlen Specter. I think that, he's a repulsive guy. He really is. He's more self-absorbed than most. He's an awful person.
This isn't about him personally.
No, he's only out for Arlen Specter.
Yes,
he's not really out for the people of Pennsylvania. He's not really out for the country. He's out for Arlen Specter. Nonetheless, the Republican Party needs to find a way to accommodate Arlen Specter under our tent. Because politics is a game of addition, not a game of subtraction. And when we lose people like Arlen Specter, we're losing the ability to grow and to expand. And so I think ultimately it's not a good thing that he decided to take the 30 pieces of silver.
Well, let me suggest to you this. Not that the Republicans will ever listen to advice from a dying-the-wool Democrat such as me. But if your party tried to work with Barack Obama, if your party would do some give and take and say, you know what, we disagree with you on this, but we can work with you on this. I remember I was sitting in Congress after September 11, 2001, and you will find no one more supportive of President Bush at that time than most of the Democrats. We weren't happy the Supreme Court installed him when Al Gore won the election, but when we knew that our country was under attack, you found members of Congress come together arm in arm singing God Bless America. You found Democrats ready to give this president what he wanted. And what did George Bush do right after September 11th? He used that goodwill not to fight the terrorists, but to get a tax cut. He did very partisan things. I think that if the Republicans come and say, you know what, Barack Obama, we're not going to agree on abortion, we're not going to agree on some issues, but on health care, on the environment, there are issues
Mark,
we can compromise
okay.
on, then I think you'll find if those people aren't run out of the party for compromising.
No, they won't be.
Here's what we'll do. The Washington Post gives this whole thing on how it was very, very important to Boehner and Cantor in the House that zero Republicans, that how vitally important it was to crack the whip that zero Republicans support the surplus. And you know what that
does? It was not worth supporting, though.
But you know what it does? It encourages the President of the United States to say, you know what? If you're not going to compromise, if you're not going to sit and talk with me, then you're right. Then I don't need you. Then we'll just use our majority.
Where did the President compromise on the stimulus bill? The answer is he didn't compromise at all. Where did Nancy Pelosi compromise on the stimulus bill? The answer is she would not let the Republicans in the room when either the first bill was being drafted.
They increased the money for National Student Health for Arlen Specter.
I'm talking about the House and the President. First of all, the president punted the whole thing to Capitol Hill.
That's not true either.
Which was a huge mistake.
Yeah, that's your talk.
Were any Republicans allowed in the conference? I mean, even Arlen Specter, was he allowed in the conference after they were resolving the House and Senate? No. Arlen Specter was told, please leave, Arlen. You're not welcome inside the door here. You've got to give something. Republicans will cooperate, but the president is not interested in cooperating. The speaker is not interested in cooperating.
Exactly wrong.
And Harry Reid is not interested in cooperating. Let's talk about health care.
Had they been interested in cooperating, they would have gone in the room and said, you know what, Barack Obama...
They weren't allowed in the room.
Barack Obama went alone into the House Republican conference three times.
He couldn't control Pelosi.
And he made calls. There are so many Republicans he would invite alone one-on-one. He said, what will it take? What will it take for you to support the surplus?
And
you know what they told him? Nothing.
Okay.
We can't do it. Our leadership has said we can't compromise.
Okay, here's the thing. That's why
your party's losing
money. Here's the thing. The stimulus originally proposed was about $1 trillion. You told me it was $850 billion down to whatever it was. Okay. $850 billion.
Lost about 10%.
The Republicans proposed $350 billion. I'm sure we could have come together on $500 billion. I'm absolutely positive we could have come together on $500
billion. Closer to the Republican than the Democrat.
Let's call it 50-50. But the president wasn't going to give anything.
It wasn't about the amount of money, Mike.
It was about where the money was going.
The Republicans wanted it always to go to the rich.
No.
The Democrats say that, you know what, 95% of us deserve a tax cut on occasion.
Let's talk about health care.
Okay. I will in a second, but first I want to get to our caller who's been holding a while. George from Fairfax, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you. I've got three things that I would like to comment on at this point. I've got something probably reserved later when you get to health care.
Okay.
But I would have a request. I'd like to see on your show you get some union representatives and Vincent Gray. Recently, Vincent Gray on the media said that anytime you get union representatives on the show, all you get is diatribe. When you look at the other side of the media, and you get all these people like the Hudson Foundation, the American Enterprise Institute, nobody ever tells you who sponsors, who pays those salaries, what the salary, total salary pay is for those groups.
Let me just tell you, George, on this, and I'll get to your other 2 points I know you want to mention. I've done many shows with union representatives. I've done shows specifically on the Employee Free Choice Act. And, in fact, the Inside Scoop has expanded to even have an Inside Scoop labor show run by Shannon Sullivan. So we are certainly not hiding from union issues here, I assure you.
I must have missed those, but I apologize.
Okay, what are your other 2 points?
Okay, first of all, your compadre there said two things. The first one, that tax cuts did not go deep enough. If I recall, back in the 20s, tax rate was at something in the 70% range. It was at least 70%. It might have been as high as 90%. The economy was just cruising right along, just as it was when Bush was in office.
Actually,
how much of a tax cut do you want to give?
Actually, you're not exactly right there, George. In the 20s, taxes weren't so high. They were high in the 30s and 40s and 50s. Under Franklin Roosevelt in the 40s, during World War II, they were as high as 90%. In fact, the highest rate, the 90% rate, was for people who made over $5 million at that time. And economists have calculated there was only one person, John D. Rockefeller, who earned that much money. He was in a tax rate on his own. They were 90% under Roosevelt in the 40s. They were 70% under Eisenhower in the 50s. And Jack Kennedy... Kennedy lowered them to 70. Kennedy lowered them to 70, the highest rate, and then they were later lowered on to 50. Now, of course, Republicans are massively complaining about a rate that goes up to back where it was under Bill Clinton, 39.6%. Stay on the phone, George. Hold on, George. We've got to take a break. We'll get back to you. I know Mike definitely wants to give an answer as well. And if you want to call in and join George in putting your 2 cents in, I hope you do. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Be right back.
Some of Bin Laden calls getting nuclear weapons a religious duty.
Today, materials that can be used to make nuclear weapons are stored in more than 40 countries.
Sometimes protected by just a chain-link fence.
Yet not enough is being done to lock down these materials
before terrorists steal them. Why did we learn all this?
My mother.
My son.
My sister-in-law.
Were all murdered September 11th.
Help protect America.
Together we can.
Please join us.
The stem cell issue is being debated throughout the country. Truth is, most everyone has an opinion, even if they don't know the facts.
Let's stop arguing and start really understanding the potential of stem cell research.
For us and for millions of Americans living with disabilities, get the facts.
Call 1-877-842-3442 for free information from the Stem Cell Research Foundation. That's 1-877-842-3442.
Following the tragic events of September 11th, there have been hundreds of violent attacks against innocent Americans.
Remember what that flag you're waving stands for.
Remember, please stop the hate.
We're stronger when we are united.
Remember. Remember what that flag you're waving stands for.
One nation under God.
Indivisible.
With liberty.
And justice.
For all.
In America, there's either room for everyone or it's not America.
Don't pick the wrong fight.
Let's keep America land of the free.
Stop the hate.
Planning a home renovation? Put this at the top of your to-do list.
Because after 10 years, none of you are protected against tetanus and another potentially fatal disease, diphtheria.
A minor injury, such as a cut or a scrape, can put you at risk for a tetanus infection.
And while safety gear offers some protection, an up-to-date vaccination called the TD booster is the best insurance against tetanus.
So get the TD booster. If it's been 10, do it again.
Here again, the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're checking on those tax rates. We found out that, yes, it was 91%, the top individual tax rate under Franklin Delano Roosevelt in the 1940s. John F. Kennedy cut it, the top marginal tax rate, to 70%. Now, understand, that's not the rate everyone's paying. That's only the people at the very, very top of the scale. Ronald Reagan cut it in 1981 to 50%, and then later on, by 86, had cut it down to 28%. So, George's point, Mike, is that, you know, that seems to be the only thing Republicans care about, is that top marginal tax rate.
Well, you know, it's important, George. There are the things that we care about, but it's not just Republicans that care about it. Let me read you from 1962. Who said this? Quote, it is a paradoxical truth that tax rates are too high today and tax revenues are too low. The soundest way to raise revenues in the long run is to cut the rates now. The purpose of cutting taxes now is not to incur a budget deficit, but to achieve the more prosperous, expanding economy, which will bring about a budget surplus. I've already given the thing away to Mark. That was Jack Kennedy who said that back in 1962, as he was campaigning for his large tax cut at that time. And embarrassingly enough, one of his chief foes who opposed it was a deficit hawk by the name of Barry Goldwater.
Okay, but here's the thing,
sad.
Mike. Kennedy, I think, was right.
He was.
In cutting the top tax rate from 91% to 70%. You will never hear me argue that the richest people in America should pay more than 70% income taxes. I'll grant you that. At a rate of 91%, I think you have some real problems with the economy. In this case, Barack Obama is taking the top rate from about 35 back to where it was under Clinton, 39.6, still under 40%. It's hardly what Jack Kennedy was doing. Let me
give you one more quote.
George, if I can,
just to address that, because I'm going to read now from an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal written by the late Jack Kemp. It was published on June 12, 1990. As I think our viewers know, Jack Kemp was a very strong advocate of supply-side economics, a very crusading tax cutter, all-around neat guy. And he writes in the Wall Street Journal, it was the economy triggered by Ronald Reagan's supply-side revolution of tax cuts in 1981 that generated 21.5 million new jobs, more than 4 million new businesses, relatively low inflation compared to the previous inflation in the 70s under President Carter, and a higher standard of living for most people. The economy created more jobs in that decade than all of Europe, Canada, and Japan combined. And according to the U.S. Treasury, federal income taxes, as a result of the tax cut, federal income taxes paid by the top 1% of all taxpayers had surged by more than 80% in 1987 compared to 1981. Why? Because they were encouraged to do things that produced economic activity, increasing their tax liability.
You know what happened in the 1980s is that
the
rich got much, much richer.
Everyone's standard of living went up in the 80s, Mark.
We went from a place where CEOs were making 40 times what their lowest wage employees were making to making 400 or 4,000 times. And when the rich get so much money, yes, they end up actually paying more taxes. But what's interesting is a better economy in the 1980s was the 1990s. When we had Bill Clinton, we not only had the same 39.6 tax rate that you're talking about, but we had the rich get richer, the middle class get richer, and the poor got richer, and the economic expansion of the 90s lasted even longer than that from the 80s. That's my model.
The Reagan expansion was a rising tide that lifted all boats. The Clinton expansion was the irrational exuberance that ended in the bursting of the tech bubble and a recession.
You know, you can rewrite history all you want, but the American people...
Well, we had a recession when Clinton was leaving office.
No, the recession happened in March 2001 after George Bush became president. George from Fairfax, we know you're still on the phone.
Yeah.
What was your third point?
Well, I just wanted to go back to one little point there. Mike did not answer the question. Which taxes would he cut specifically? If he's suggesting he would cut taxes to the richest, Bill Gates has had more money than people can imagine for years. He's got plenty of money to invest, plenty of money to reinvest. I'm just not seeing him do that. How would giving him a tax cut help that?
Well, George, all I can tell you is it's Bill Gates' money to do with what he wants to do. It's not the government's money.
How does it help the economy to give Bill Gates more money? Bill Gates has $10 billion, so now he has $20 billion. Probably has more than that.
Mark,
I don't know. How does it help the economy? When you give poor middle-class people money, they spend it. They need the money. How does it help the economy to give rich people more money?
Your question is irrelevant. It's not your money.
He's not going to answer the question.
It's not your money. It's not my money. It's not George's money. And it's not our producer's money. And it's not any of our audience's money. It's Bill Gates's money.
Okay.
One of the
So you concede that it may not help the economy, but you're doing it for philosophical reasons.
The primary definition of freedom is the ability to use your own smarts, your own ingenuity, and your own sweat to go out there and be the best you can be, and to keep for yourself the fruits of your own labor without oppressive government confiscation and interference in what you're doing.
And if you have enough money, then you can buy a lobbyist who will make sure the government won't regulate you, and then you can defraud poor people and take all of their money, too.
Well, if that's what Bill Gates is doing, you know.
But it is what the financial institutions did. It's what the people at AIG did. It's the reason we're in the mess.
It's not my money. It's not your money. It's Bill Gates' money. We don't have the right to take it from Bill Gates just because we think we can spend it better than he can.
It makes the economy better. George, last question. Go ahead.
Well, it's kind of interesting when you look at the miners back under Warren G. Harding and the Republicans, what happened there in the hills in Mingo County down in southern West Virginia, when you had 3,000 private detectives and local law enforcement shooting on the protesting miners who simply wanted the right to assemble. Something under the Constitution.
Well, poor people aren't allowed to assemble for their rights, George.
Yes.
Go ahead. Ask your last question.
The last point was this.
I'll just go for the record. That West Virginia is a Democratic state. Well. Republicans have nothing to do with that. You know,
the
he's a Democrat.
The mining companies that control West Virginia.
Yes.
Go ahead, George.
The last thing was the Republicans think for themselves. When you look at the voting record, it does not demonstrate that. It demonstrates the exact opposite. They are in lockstep with the leaders, and in particular, under things like the Unpatriot Act that Bush promoted. Now, all the politicians were afraid to challenge him. So I'm not seeing your point there. I think you're living in a fantasy world there, Mike, if that's what you think.
Thank you for your call, George. I appreciate it. Just to expand on what he said, though, it seems to me that you do find, under George Bush, for example, there were Democrats who were willing to break from their party and support the president on this, that, or the other. The Republicans, it seems, have taken all those people, all those swing districts, all the people who might work with the president and said, get out of our party. We don't want anyone who votes for anything that Barack Obama could possibly want. Get out. Let me suggest to you that that is a formula leading to a much, much smaller party. You're not only going to lose Arlen Specter, you might lose 2 senators from Maine and still a whole bunch more in the House.
Well, I agree with you. It's not a formula for success, but I don't think that's what's going on, Mark. I think the Republicans analyzed what was in the stimulus bill. I think they're analyzing what the president is doing, and they're saying, you know what, the American people don't want that. The polls bear out that although they admire Obama, for some reason they're disconnected on the issues and they don't like the issues that he's pushing. So what are the Republicans going to do? If you're going to build for the future, you have to go along with what the people are asking for. And I certainly think that the fact that they come forward with positive alternatives that unfortunately Speaker Pelosi won't even let see the light of day on the floor of the House for a vote is a step in the right direction. You are correct. I will confess you are correct that there is a certain minority within the Republican Party that thinks that we need to be cleansed of anybody who's not 100% pure in the party. Those people are, for the most part, fringe wacko radicals.
Fringe wacko radicals?
Yeah,
why is it that the Republicans felt it was so important, whether it's a stimulus package or anything else, they felt it was vital to have a unified no? Let me suggest to you that the whole
everybody in Congress makes their own decision. Now, there was a unanimous vote against it. It was clearly, it held not a single Republican principle to it. There was no tax cut that was going to be stimulative. There was excessive spending that our grandchildren are now going to pay. There is nothing in it that helped the economy recover. This was Rahm Emanuel's don't let a good crisis go to waste because we can socialize government as a result of this crisis.
House Minority Whip Eric Cantor, according to the Washington Post, the man leading the GOP opposition to the package, was also aware that securing the votes of Castle and Upton, two moderate Republicans from Delaware and Michigan, might hinge on making sure that no other Republicans backed the legislation. So they made sure that they would get this unified no. Let me suggest to you that the Republicans could do better, and then we'll move on to other topics because I've said this before. Instead of being the Just Say No party, as a party that's willing to say, all right, Barack Obama, you got elected on these principles. We understand you're going to implement those principles. We're going to be against those principles. But on this other issue, we can work together. On this, on education, perhaps, or perhaps part of the environment, or perhaps partly with regard to health care. If we will work with you, and you will take some of our ideas, even though we're not going to try to overturn what the voters decided on November 2008. The Republican that does that, let me suggest to you that Susan Collins and Olympia Snowe of Maine are Republicans that do that, and they got some of what they wanted. Arlen Specter, frankly, was a Republican that did that, kicked out by his local Republicans, now he's
a
Democrat.
No, he chose to leave, Mark. He was not kicked out by anything. Now, I think we'll all grant, even Arlen Specter, old and out of touch as he is, realized that he was not going to win the Republican primary.
I don't dispute that.
So now he's your problem, and I wish you well with him.
I don't dispute that. And frankly, I'll tell you this. If Arlen Specter doesn't support Barack Obama's agenda, does not come around, then I think he should see a Democratic primary opponent.
We'll see. No, he will see a Democratic primary opponent, and I doubt he's going to get through it.
And you know what? That's okay, because I would prefer a real Democrat over Arlen Specter myself. That's okay with me. I don't think Arlen's going to get it. I'm willing to have an open mind. I'm willing to see how he votes. If he votes with us most of the time, 80%, even 70%, that's fine. But his voting record was 60% Republican.
70% Republican, actually. It was
70% Republican. I saw 60-something, you need to dispute on how these things count.
It was close enough for me.
We have a lot more to talk about.
It was close enough for me.
We have a lot more to talk about.
I think Arlen Specter is welcome back.
I want to talk about the torture memos. I want to talk about foreign policy. Let's get the torture memos after the break. Foreign policy. Barack Obama did something amazing. He opened up ties to Cuba. He allowed Cuban Americans to travel there, something that, frankly, was considered a third rail of American politics. Oh, no, we'll never get Florida's votes, Democrats and Republicans said, if we allow Cuban Americans to travel. He did it, and lo and behold, not only do most Americans support him, most Cuban Americans support him. He's willing to think outside the box. He's going around. He's getting a lot of support in Europe. Our troops were very glad to see him. On the international stage, he's doing an exceptional job.
Wow, I don't know where to start on that.
A minute and a half.
He's got a bunch of two-bit thugs that are pushing him around, and he's getting nothing in return for it.
Are they pushing him around? What has Chavez gotten other than a handshake and a book gift?
He shouldn't have gotten a handshake, and he shouldn't have gotten a photo op. Now,
handshake doesn't cost anything.
Yeah, it does.
It doesn't cost in terms of prestige.
He is using that in terms of the propaganda and prestige on the world stage to say, look what I did. I'm pushing this president around.
Let's see what we get back.
And there's President Obama sitting there with this little goofy.
Here's the rule. If we get something back, it's clearly worthwhile. We don't know. We will see.
Mark,
we will see what happens.
If he gets
nothing back, then he can say, look, Chavez, I reached out to you. You gave me nothing. Sorry, we're going to be hard on you.
Chavez has the enhanced credibility of the photo op with the president on the front page of every paper in the world.
Chavez is a two-bit thug, going to get the prestige.
Fidel Castro was a two-bit thug.
Right, but it was harming Americans.
Right.
And
what we did was we said, okay, Fidel, we're going to have investment and we're going to have travel back and forth to Cuba. And we did that.
And then
we said 2 days later, now it's time for you to, improve human rights and open up your jails.
Right.
And Castro said, no way in hell.
Well, let's see. Let's see what he does.
We're not getting anything in return for what we're doing.
If they don't give us anything in return, then Obama should say to the dictators the same way he said to the Republicans.
He's already
either
giving them
with
too
me
much.
Or you don't. And if the dictators refuse to work with him, I hope he is very harsh on them.
It's too late, Mark. It's too late.
A handshake is not too late.
He has already risked the presidency's prestige and the United States' prestige by
cozying
up the
Americans. Why do Cuban Americans?
It's not relevant what Cuban Americans.
It is relevant.
No, it's not.
They're the ones who are opposed to reaching out to Castro all this time. We're going to take another break. Folks, if you want to call in, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275.
This year, 28,000 Americans will be diagnosed with oral cancer. Every year, 7,000 Americans die of oral cancer.
Let's limit ourselves to 3 minutes a topic. If you want to get four in, 3 minutes per topic.
I didn't fit the profile. I didn't smoke or drink. I had no family history of cancer. I was 31 years old. I went to see my dentist about a sore in my mouth that wouldn't heal. It was oral cancer. I had to have a radical neck dissection and a portion of my tongue reconstructed. I didn't know if I was going to live or die.
I'm Surgeon General Richard Carmona. The survival rate for oral cancer is only 50%. Oral cancer can happen to anyone. If you have a sore or lesion in your mouth that doesn't heal within 2 weeks, see your dentist. Early detection is the key.
Early detection saves lives.
One in eight Americans goes hungry. One idea helped change that. A community started a garden that blossomed into farmers markets. One in six children lives in poverty. One group of women found an answer by opening a daycare center that their neighbors could afford. Today, 36 million Americans live in poverty. But one by one, people are helping themselves and each other to change the picture of poverty to one of hope. For easy ways you can help, visit povertyusa.org.
Two words for you. Pop quiz. Ready? Name any funny movie. A drama. Name a mystery. And one more thing. Name the movie your kids saw today in science class.
Know what really matters. Know about your kid's school. And know about your kid. Find out 100 ways to know more, do more. Here.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. During the commercial break, I try sometimes to find stuff on the Internet. I didn't have enough time, but I very much dispute. I'll let you look it up yourself. I very much dispute the idea that the American people are not behind virtually all of Barack Obama's policies. You look at it one by one, healthcare, environment, energy. The only one I saw people were scared about, which appropriately, is the deficit. Every single other policy, the polls I've seen show them supporting that. Mike disputes it, so I'll let you do your own research.
All right. My main source, I'll confess, is Rasmussen. Your main source is?
Oh, the Washington Post. But I've seen it in other polls, too. There's New York Times polls, ABC polls. I bet even a Fox News poll. But we'll let our viewers check it out. I think it's a reason why. I don't think it's his personal affection and his puppy dog the reason they like Barack Obama. I like the puppy dog, too. I like his two pretty little girls, too. But that's not the reason American people are behind Barack Obama.
He said he was going to get a rescue. He instead went out and got a designer dog from a breeder.
Oh, you're going to tempt the puppy! I can't believe!
He said he was going to get a rescue.
This is like, they went out to FDR's little dog, Fala.
Now you're attacking
Barack Obama's puppy dog.
Why is he out getting designer dogs from breeders?
I just want you to know.
When there are plenty of dogs that need to be rescued. From shelters.
I stand firmly on the side of Bo Obama on this one. Don't attack the puppy dog.
There's nothing wrong with the puppy. There's plenty wrong with buying a designer dog from a breeder when there are dogs that need rescue from shelters.
My daughter has allergies. Give the kids a break. This is just typical Republicans. You even attack the puppy
dog.
There
are plenty.
Can we get on to more serious topics?
There are plenty of hypoallergenic dogs that you can get from shelters.
They're hard. Moving on. Let's talk about the Supreme Court justice. Of course, Souter is leaving the bench.
Mm-hmm.
Souter, although appointed by George H.W. Bush Sr., was on the leftward side of the court. I think he was a moderate conservative, but given that this court is so right-wing, that put him on the lefter edge of it. Still, with Kennedy as a swing vote, I don't think that his replacement will be that much of a difference. I think you'll agree with me.
No, I think Justice Souter was a reliable left-wing vote. There's nothing
He was to the left
moderate.
Of the middle of the court, which is right-wing conservative.
There's nothing moderate or moderate liberal about Justice Souter. He was pure left-wing. But here's the thing about Justice Souter.
Why was he called a reliable conservative by Senator Warren Rudman of New Hampshire back when he was appointed?
Because they didn't know him. They were looking for somebody that nobody knew.
Warren Rudman had known him for years.
Right, but he
was from New Hampshire, too.
Mark, he was a cipher, okay? He was selected by John Sununu because he was a cipher that they thought they could get through and they didn't know what they were getting.
No, I think he was a moderate Yankee conservative of which your party has basically kicked out of the party.
The deal
Come on,
is,
Susan Collins, Olympia Snow, join us.
Here's the deal. Yes, he will be replaced by someone of a similar strain, left-wing.
No, I think he'll be replaced by a Democrat.
By somebody who has no respect for the Constitution and wants to legislate from the bench. But the thing about Justice Souter, let me finish. The thing about Justice Souter is that he wasn't a particularly distinguished jurist. He was just some guy who went along with the crowd. He didn't have a single case that I can think of that, you know, he wrote that was something that they'll study in the case law.
I'll tell you one that they'll study for generations.
What I would do if I was Obama, and I hope he doesn't do this, but what I would do if I was Obama, I would look for somebody who, by force of personality and by force of presence, can be a leader on the court, and that will be damaging.
I agree with you.
That will be damaging because you take a guy who's essentially a nobody, just go along with the group, and you replace him with a leader, and that will count for something.
I'll give you an example of someone who I think has really been a leader, and that's Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I think she is someone who has very much not only stood up for her principles, but very much led the way and convinced a lot of people, and is very much a force on the court. I would like to see someone of her ilk on the court. Another woman would be great, doesn't have to be. An Hispanic would be great, doesn't have to be.
Well, they say Judge Sonia is going to be the one.
Well, we'll see. Particularly, but someone who can be, like she is, a real leader and can explain her views. I have to tell you, though, for someone who claims that liberals don't believe in the Constitution, it was Republicans who were scurrying under the woodwork saying, don't talk about the torture. Don't let people know what's going on. Don't let people know whether Bush broke the law or not. You have no right to know. Let me suggest to you something about the torture memos. Whether or not they were effective, you and I can argue about, frankly, scholars will probably argue about for decades. Some people in intelligence say they were, some say they weren't, some say we could have gotten it another way. We probably will never know, because sometimes we started torturing people, and then we didn't find out.
I think we do know, because we have the letter from President Obama's own Director of National Intelligence,
who
said that they were very effective.
And he also said that he didn't know whether we could get the same information without using them. The effectiveness we will disagree on, but on the law, how can we disagree? You're talking about that Democrats don't respect the law. We signed a convention. The convention bans torture. And the Constitution says that treaties are the supreme law of the land. Let me suggest to you this.
Mark,
and of course, waterboarding, as you know, has been banned as torture since the Spanish Inquisition. You know that we executed Japanese soldiers for doing it to American GIs. You know, we court-martialed GIs in 1898 in the Spanish-American War. This specifically is. Here's my point, though. Whether or not you like torture, why don't we bring it to the American people? Why didn't we say, you know what, we think that Al-Qaeda is so much of a danger, let's have a vote. Let's bring it before Congress. Let's not just let two or three or four people know. Let's let everyone know, not who we're doing it to, not the specifics information we're trying to get out, but say, let's have a vote. Let's see whether the American people support torture or not. Let's do it by the book. Even Alan Dershowitz has talked about the fact that he thinks that maybe you should get a torture warrant. If you want to torture someone, go to the court, get a warrant before a neutral magistrate, because you argue that it's a very important thing. Why is it? Not the effectiveness of it. We can disagree on that. I don't think it's a good idea.
Well, if the president's own director of national intelligence says it was effective,
I don't know how you can argue. My point is the law. You just said that the Democrats don't respect the Constitution. Under the Constitution, the Geneva Conventions are the law of the land. If we're going to violate Geneva Conventions, shouldn't we at least abolish them, remove ourselves from the treaty, bring it to the American people, do it in a democratic fashion? Why all the secrets?
You know what, Mark? Our difference is in interpretation, not in
why weren't
in
those memos public
what we
before
believe.
Now?
The reason,
if you believe that your interpretation is correct, why not say, you know what, here's John Yoo's memo. It's based on the Medicaid definition.
Because by releasing the memos, the president has made us less safe in this country. And he will come to regret this.
Because people know we're torturing for sure?
No. All right. You see, this is a matter, again, of interpretation. I don't think putting somebody in a box and inserting a little spider in there that they might be scared of is something that is torture. You know, it's just, it was a harmless spider. It's been
documented.
It was
a caterpillar. And you know what? I'm not worried about the caterpillar either.
That's what the president defines as torture. Eric Holder defines as torture.
I think
that's what the Democratic Party defines as torture.
Waterboarding. Keep putting someone under freezing cold water. And holding someone without sleep for 11 days on end and putting
that's
them in freezing cold temperatures.
No, that's not torture.
And very hot.
Wasn't freezing
and stress
cold.
Positions and people who are, chained up on the ceiling and sending people to foreign countries to be beaten and innocent people being beaten. That's what I consider torture. And here's the thing. If you're right, Mike, why not bring it to the American people? Why don't the Republicans trust the American people? Let's have a debate on it. You can argue it's not torture. I can argue it is torture. Let the American people and their elected representatives decide. Why all the secrecy if everything's copacetic?
Well, the first is you never want to let the enemy know what your interrogation techniques are. That's the worst thing you can do, because then they are trained. You know what? Every pilot that we have in the United States military goes through survival, escape, evasion, and resistance training. We study what the other side does, and we take them away for 2 weeks, and we teach them how to survive and resist if they were ever captured. We don't want to publish what we're doing so the enemy can practice and be trained
to resist
what
we do. So we can't have a democratic vote on torture, because to do so would let our enemies know that we actually torture.
First of all, we don't torture.
That's tortured logic.
No, we don't torture, but the last thing we want to do is talk about our techniques. Because now the enemy can be trained in resisting it, and now we will get less information out of him, and now more Americans will die as
a result
of...
Is it worth it to burn the Constitution?
As a result of the president releasing the memos, more Americans are going to die now, and that's a shame.
No.
We are going to be less safe as a country. We are going to have more attacks in this country as a result of this. And I am flabbergasted.
You were talking about the Constitution.
Why
can't we respect the law? Why? I think that this document still works. I think that the law still works. I think democracy still works. Let me read you what Condoleezza Rice said. I'm sure you heard it. Condoleezza Rice said, and this is a direct quote at Stanford University, "The president instructed us that nothing we would do would be outside of our obligations, our legal obligations under the Convention Against Torture. And so, by definition, if it was authorized by the president, it did not violate our obligations under the Convention Against Torture. As Richard Nixon once famously said, when the president does it, it means it is not illegal." If it were legal, if John Yoo's memos made sense, why not, you don't have to give names, why not say, here's what we think you can do legally, show it to more than two members of Congress, show it to the entire Intelligence Committee at least, probably to the entire Congress, and have a vote,
you know,
on whether it's legal.
You know what, it was shared. First of all, it's Congress that agrees that it will be shown to the leadership of the committees and the leadership of the Congress.
No.
Nancy Pelosi knew about this from the beginning. She had launched no objections to
it
all.
They the entire Intelligence Committee.
Harry Reid knew about this from the beginning. He launched no objections.
He could launch an objection. To make it public, which is what you said can't be done.
He could have written a handwritten letter and delivered it, and he could have spoken about it. He didn't do any of those things.
Why not tell the American people?
Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi were in on this.
You and I have talked about waterboarding since you've been on the show.
Right, and I first raised it
on my show in 2004.
It's okay, not
a lot of this stuff was not secret. The fact that we did it for sure is now proof. Why can't we have this debate in public? If Republicans want a vote on torture, let the American people have an election.
Right.
The Republican says, I like torture. The Democrat says, I don't. Let the people decide. Mark, why do you hate democracy?
First of all, we did have a debate on waterboarding. It was last year, and John McCain authored the legislation that was adopted by the United States Congress.
That outlawed waterboarding.
That's right. So we did have a debate. It wasn't public. The Congress involved themselves, et cetera.
But we did it before we had a debate on it. What George Bush has done is break the law first, ask questions later. What this president does is he says we want to expose what happened so it doesn't happen again.
There was no breaking the law at all. But speaking of breaking the law, I don't hear...
Because the president authorized it?
I don't hear the outrage from you, Mark, about the fact that the Obama administration has outed the two former Army psychologists that were the designers of this program. And that their names and photos were all over ABC News. Where's the outrage? Are we going to have a congressional investigation? Well, are we going to have accountability? These people's lives aren't worth anything now. They are walking dead men. But I don't hear the outrage. Where's the investigation?
The outrage should be for the Abu Ghraib stuff.
Where's
people
the investigation
like Lindsey
England for the fact that the Obama administration leaked the names of these people to ABC News?
18-year-old woman,
undercover
agent, West Virginia was in jail because she did what her president ordered her to do. That's wrong.
Covert agents out of
by the administration.
No, you want to come on the inside scoop? Please do so at RadioInsideScoop.com.
Mark Levine at my plane.
The president wants to spy on 200 million Americans without a warrant. Has he read this document which he was sworn to uphold?
Now, I will not have you libel Abraham Lincoln.
I don't understand the problem with registering.